You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
And good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, September 6th, 2018.
The forest ecosystem is disturbed, and that disturbance is a concern for species that live there, especially species that may not be very capable of traveling.
WFHB correspondent Jonah Chester speaks with Dr. Ray Schnapp, conservation director with the Indiana Forest Alliance, to discuss how logging in Indiana in today's feature report.
Also coming up in today's program, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks if you think Bloomington is affordable. You'll hear residents and listeners' opinions on the state's most expensive rental market later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
The Indiana University Media School is developing an investigative journalism center. In a press release today, IU announced a $6 million gift to the media school by a graduate. The investigative center is expected to open next fall, according to IU Media School Dean Jim Shanahan.
Gift from Michael Arnold, who's an alumnus, something we've been working on for a while. He's an alum who is concerned that in today's media environment, we need to find new ways to support and fund journalism, especially investigative journalism, which is expensive to do, requires time and people and resources and so forth. So he and I shared that concern. So I've really been working with him since I arrived here to develop something that would address his concern and allow the media school to make a contribution to the life of the state in terms of continuing to highlight the importance of good journalism and to actually funding it and doing it.
IU alumnus Michael Arnotes graduated with a degree in journalism and worked at the Elkhart Truth newspaper before shifting careers to physical therapy. Shanahan says he's been working with Arnotes to develop the center.
The center is now being created, and so we'll begin by doing a search for a director for the center, and that will happen this year. We're working on preparing a facility for the center, an office here in the media school in Franklin Hall. That's going to be completed probably by the end of this semester. And so the pieces for the actual center will come into place over the next few months. And yeah, then it will be a center that will exist in perpetuity into the future.
Shanahan says the IU Media School will begin a nationwide search for the investigative center's director. Other job openings will also be announced as the investigative center opens.
Monroe County's three commissioners will each get paid the same amount next year, a salary of $35,257. Currently, the president of the Monroe County Board of Commissioners receives about $700 more annually than the other two commissioners. The Monroe County Council approved the changes yesterday in its second round of budget hearings. Councilmember Marty Hawk and Cheryl Munson support the change. Munson says the newly approved salary is not far off from what commissioners in neighboring counties earn.
I took a quick look at commissioners' salaries for counties that are similar to ours in population or larger, and the $35,257 is only about $600-$700 difference than the average of those other county salaries. This council spent considerable time year before last in reviewing salaries of county employees to make sure that they were justly compensated within the market that we have, and also to improve retention. And I think it will be time next year to look at elected official salaries, not for the same point, because we're really not competing with our neighboring counties for these elected officials to run for office, but in the sense of fairness.
County Council Member Jeff McKim says he thinks the presidents of both County Council and the Board of Commissioners deserve to be paid more, but given the constraints imposed by the state of Indiana, he supports the change.
I do think the president of both boards should receive a higher salary, but the State Board of Accounts says that we can't do that. I mean, it's just my prediction, but I think it will be changed next year. Some of you may remember House Bill 1104 this year included legislation that would allow the presidents to specifically authorize the presidents to make a higher salary. And it was one of those bills that passed after midnight at the end of the session, and so thereby failed. But clearly the legislative intent was there and the votes were there to enable that kind of salary. So I anticipate the next year will be adding back in that stipend, because the president really does have significant additional burden just in terms of time and the need to coordinate agendas and meetings and that sort of thing. And I think that should be recognized by increased salary.
The commissioner's 2019 salary includes a 1.7% cost of living increase.
While the Monroe County commissioners have agreed to all be paid the same amount, the Bloomington City Council is moving in the opposite direction. Council members have included a $1,000 increase in pay for the city council president in this year's proposed budget. They've also included an $800 increase for the city council vice president. Council member Steve Volin says the proposed increase in compensation are due to city council president and vice presidents attending more meetings and taking on more work than other council members. The current City of Bloomington Common Council president is Dorothy Granger. Current vice president is Isabel Piedmont Smith. Common Council members elect or re-elect presidents and vice presidents every year.
Indiana state legislators are considering a tax increase requested by sheriffs across the state. WFHB reporter Gabe Donnelly has more.
The Indiana Sheriffs Association proposed a tax rate increase to ease overcrowding of low-level felons in county jails last week. The rate is currently at $35 per day for low-level felons, and the proposed $20 increase would aid in solving overcrowding jails, says Hendricks County Sheriff Brett Clark. According to the Terre Haute Tribune Star, the sheriff brought the tax increase to state legislatures during a summer study committee last week. Sheriff Clark cited that the rate had not been changed in over 30 years, and it is well below the federal rate of $55 per day per felon. 2016 Indiana law requires that convicted nonviolent felons must serve their sentences in county jails rather than state prisons. The law caused overcrowding at many county jails across the state of Indiana. This overcrowding comes from housing both convicted felons and those jailed awaiting trial at the county jails. Another solution to overcrowding at Indiana County jails is currently being piloted in Monroe County. According to County Sheriff Brad Swain, altering bail postings will decrease the incarcerated population.
Monroe County is one of the pilot counties for bail review, in which it's the opinion of higher courts that if a person is likely to return to court, then why are we posting a bail if there's some evidence that is there which would show that that person would show up for court.
This bail review would dismiss the need for bail and allow charged persons to not take up space in the county jail. Sheriff Swain suggests that the evidence necessary would include local residents in proximity to the courthouse or little prior record. For WFHB, I'm Gabe Donnelly.
A planned discussion between local midterm election candidates faces a last-minute withdrawal. WFHB's Annie Aguiar reports.
A Republican candidate is dropping out of a public forum hosted by Bloomington Black Lives Matter. Jacob Franklin, a candidate from Monroe Circuit Court Clerk, announced in a public statement last night that he wouldn't be participating in a seat at the table, Bloomington Black Lives Matter's midterm candidate roundtable discussion. The public forum takes place tomorrow. Franklin says he feels the conversation wouldn't be focused on the office he's running for, based on a questionnaire Bloomington Black Lives Matter sent out to candidates ahead of the primaries in May.
There really was no way for me to have a discussion about the office based on those questions, so there couldn't be a dialogue no matter how I tried to spin it back into the clerk's office. So it just feels like if Black Lives Matter would like to meet me in the middle and discuss what I can do for the office to ensure that all people are treated equally, then I've got no problem doing that.
Every candidate who responded to the May questionnaire was asked the same 18 questions about how their desired role would relate to social justice in Bloomington. All but one of the 17 respondents wrote out lengthy answers. Franklin, instead, answered every single question with the same response. Quote, not applicable to the clerk of Monroe Circuit Court. He gave that answer 18 times in a row. Based on that questionnaire, he says he thinks tomorrow's discussion would be off-topic. Franklin, who was the first Republican candidate to RSVP for the roundtable discussions, didn't contact Bloomington Black Lives Matter directly in his withdrawal, instead sending out his public statement at 9:54 p.m. Wednesday night. Vox Booker, a leader of Bloomington Black Lives Matter, says the late-night move was disappointing.
Disingenuous would be the term that he's gone through several confirmation emails and never indicated that he was not attending. Even once his name was published on the schedule, he still made no indication that he wasn't adamantly involved.
Franklin ends his public statement by stating that racism and sexism are created when differences between people are defined.
I do and will, whenever I take an oath of office, I understand that I serve all people, all citizens within Monroe County. I look forward to doing that impartially and with integrity and non-judgmentally. So,
Booker says Franklin's reasoning is flawed.
I found it very disturbing that he would invoke colorblindness as a defense to not participating. If we don't acknowledge the problems that our society has, we can't accurately develop solutions to fix them, solve them, rather.
Franklin will be replaced in the roundtable discussions by Thomasina Marsali, a Democrat candidate running in District 46 of the Indiana House against incumbent Bob Heaton. A seat at the table, midterm candidate roundtable discussions, will be held at the Unitarian Universalist Church at 2120 North Fee Lane, starting tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m. For WFHB, I'm Annie Aguirre.
Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Nioff. Slotograph Nioff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Nioff, law for business, community, and life.
Over the last year, the Indiana Department of Natural Resources logged several state forest areas. During the process, they also clear-cut countless old-growth trees. WFHB correspondent Jonah Chester sat down with Dr. Ray Schnapp, conservation director with the Indiana Forest Alliance, to discuss how these logging efforts are impacting Indiana's woodland ecosystem.
Can you tell me a little bit about Indiana's logging over the last year? How much have we seen? Is it an increase compared to past years?
Well, it's certainly an increase over the levels a decade ago, but last year wasn't too different from the year before, so it hasn't gone up dramatically just in the last 2 years.
Where have we seen the most logging attempts? Has it been Yellowwood State Forest? Owen Putnam has also seen logging in the last few months. Is there anywhere that's been disproportionately affected by the state's logging efforts?
Yes, Yellowwood is a large state forest, and it is a popular one for them to log. A lot of their logging is in the Yellowwood State Forest and Morgan Monroe State Forest.
Why are those forests so popular for them to log, out of curiosity?
I mean, they are large, so there's like more timber there to be harvested. That would be one reason. And then it may have to do with the market and the species that are growing there in the market for those particular species at the time.
What kind of tree species are most sought after during these logging efforts?
Well, right now, of course, we are seeing a lot of our ash trees decline due to the emerald ash borer, and ash wood is pretty valuable. So they're calling it salvage harvest in some cases. They're taking a lot of ash trees out of the forest, and we have a concern about that because if there is any resistance among the ash population, we're not going to see it if we cut them down. I mean, some trees might be infested and yet survive and overcome the infestation, but if we cut them down, they don't have a chance to show their resistance.
So aside from not being able to develop a resistance, what other environmental impacts do we see from these logging efforts? I believe erosion was a concern. You're getting rid of roots that'll cause additional runoff. Is there anything else that environmental activists such as the Indiana Forest Alliance are worried about?
Well, sure. The impact of logging is really pretty dramatic. And even though they're doing mostly what they call selective harvest, where they don't necessarily take every tree in a tract, although they do create some small clearings. They call them small clearings, usually less than 10 acres, or up to 10 acres, I should say. But even the selective logging has a huge impact on the forest in that area because the soils are compacted and there's a lot of scraping of trees that are not necessarily the trees that are left standing, that are not necessarily the target trees that are meant to be removed. Many of them are still damaged in the process. And then, of course, the forest ecosystem is disturbed. And that disturbance is a concern for species that live there, especially species that may not be very capable of traveling. You know, birds could fly away, but some species that crawl are not necessarily going to get very far. They're not going to be able to leave the area. And so they will be impacted. And nobody is really looking at the impacts on shrews, for instance. We have several species of shrews that are relatively rare. So there can be big impacts on those species and on the forest ecosystem because those species are the foundation of the food chain.
So when a forest is clear-cut, or when segments of a forest are clear-cut, usually how long does that area take to recover? How long before we start seeing it return to its normal balance, animals returning, they have a stable environment again? Are we talking a few months, a few years, maybe even a decade?
We would argue that it might take hundreds of years because there are some trees in there that are more than 200 years old, and if they're removing them, that particular sort of micro ecosystem is not going to return for a long time. Sure, vegetation will return, and often what you have during the first few years is a lot of invasive species. When you open up the forest floor to sunlight, and also even just the logging equipment can bring in invasive species, but when you open up the forest canopy and allow that sunlight to penetrate, you get kind of an explosion of growth of vegetation, but a lot of that will be very common species that are like garlic mustard and stilt grass and things that are considered undesirable and invasive. So that vegetation might help control erosion, but it certainly doesn't mean that the ecosystem is back in balance.
So you said this could take centuries to grow back to its original form. So the environmental disruption this logging can cause can last that entire time then?
You know, to get back to where it was, it might take 100 years or more. But, I mean, that's one reason why we are advocating a longer rotation, that they typically harvest on a 20-year rotation. And we think that's way too short. That's too much disturbance.
What kind of rotation would you like them to see, like in terms of a longer rotation, that 20 years?
Well, 80 or 100 years would be good. You know, this is a subject of scientific study and debate. There is a lot we don't know yet about forest ecology. There are many, especially like predator and prey relationships, that we don't really understand. And I think it's kind of arrogant to think that we can manipulate these systems and predict the outcome, because there's just a lot going on there that isn't very well understood yet from a scientific point of view. And there is quite a bit of ongoing research and debate in the literature.
So are there any current logging projects that the Indiana Department of Natural Resources or its subcontractors are carrying out that particularly trouble the Indiana Forest Alliance and environmental activists in the state? Is there anything going on right now that listeners should be aware of?
Well, there is logging going on right now, but what particularly concerns us is logging in the backcountry areas that have previously been set aside from logging for many years. So there has been a chance for older growth to develop there, and there is sort of a variety of opinions about what constitutes old growth. But these areas that have been allowed to be undisturbed for quite a while have the potential to develop into really old growth conditions. And a 100-year-old tree in Indiana is not really very old. I mean, we have species that can live for 500 years. And it would be really awesome if we were planning now to make sure there are some 500-year-old trees 500 years from now. And with our current 20-year rotation, we're not planting that at all. We're treating our state forests as if they're just a commodity crop. And we think that's particularly problematic in these backcountry areas that are supposed to be set aside for wilderness recreation.
Is there anything else you want to add to the record that you think it's important for our listeners to be aware of for this logging situation, for the future, the effects it's had on the environment? Basically, anything you think deserves airtime that I did not cover today.
I think that a lot of people maybe have not even visited our state forests, but they appreciate the fact that we have state forests. And in the Yellowwood backcountry area, we characterized tree age in some portions of that forest, and we found some trees that were 230 years old. I think, like most Hoosiers, probably don't realize that we have forests that are that old. And it's really cool that we have those resources and we should protect them. And if people care about our state forests, they should get involved.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, living in Bloomington, is it still affordable or does one have to win the lottery to live here? The university keeps growing and our town grows along with it. But is it growing for everyone or is Bloomington's affordability actually shrinking? We have gone out into the street and asked your friends and neighbors, is Bloomington still an affordable place to live?
I've lived here for a long time and I've certainly seen the cost of living go up quite a bit in the time I've lived here. I'm in a position where I'm not struggling myself, but I do know a lot of people that are, and it feels like just subjectively that it has changed and that it is quite a bit more expensive to live here and manage your life.
I think it's fairly affordable for me at least. I'm a grad student, and with the stipend they give me, I'm able to afford a single bedroom apartment, so at least for me it's affordable living on a grad student stipend salary, so I feel fine. I can afford living here.
Well, I don't know. Everything seems to be reasonably priced. Housing's a little high, but other than that, I don't. It's much cheaper than larger cities.
All right. I would say Bloomington's not the most affordable due to the fact that Indiana University kind of gentrifies the society here and causes the rent and things, at least at the places where you'd really would ideally like to stay. To be pretty high. So ultimately, the cost of living in Bloomington is a lot higher than what you would think for Southern Indiana.
Bloomington is, I know, one of the more expensive places to live in Indiana, but it can be affordable depending on what you do.
No, it's not. Guy making minimum wage can't afford an apartment. My son is borderline homeless, can't afford a place. You can only have two people in a room, in a building, you know, unrelated. So, and there aren't any low-income houses around. There's a waiting list to get into them, and no one's planning on building anymore. So that's my opinion. Not affordable. And the college atmosphere raises the price. It's nothing against the college kids. I love them. But it's not meant to be affordable.
I think the rent's expensive here because of the college students, but other than that, I think it's pretty...
It's a reasonable place to live, especially if, you know, getting subsidized by your parents. But for a lot of people, I don't think Bloomington has the types of jobs necessary to pay for a lot of the housing here. So if you're not a student, it's more difficult.
Yes, I do. I used to live in Indianapolis, and other than the gas being more expensive here, I don't have any problems with it.
Compared to other places, I've lived in larger cities, so yes, it's very pretty good compared to larger cities. Not as good as smaller towns, which are obviously going to be cheaper.
Okay, well, compared to where I'm from, which is Boulder, Colorado, it's extremely affordable because usually a one-bedroom apartment is like $1,100, and here it's $600 that I'm paying. So, yeah, I don't know. To me,
I've lived in Bloomington for about 40 years, and it has changed wildly in those 40 years from an affordability standpoint. You know, food, of course, that's going to be largely the same everywhere. But in terms of lodging, yeah, the price of lodging has gotten astronomically higher. And income's not so much. I mean, folks here in Bloomington, when I look around the country at other jobs, let's say doing what I'm doing, typically they pay quite a bit more, maybe about 15, 20% more. So all that being said, though, it is a... As you know, a stunning place to live in a wonderful town and rare. And so I guess that's what we're paying for.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Annie Aguiar, Gabe Donnelly, and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jonna Chester.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Provosky. Our engineer today is Dan Withard, with help from Chris Hack. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdain, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at WFHB.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.